Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with this evening's edition of The Hola Hoax. You know there were no gas chambers in Germany, don't you? And that Hitler had no program for exterminating the Jews, and that 6 million did not die. And I hope you're beginning to learn that the only race that has a contract out on it is the white race, in the form of the Jews, exterminating 65 million of us during the Russian Revolution, 15 million Germans after the Second World War, with the help of Eisenhower and Stalin acting together to starve them as a step in furtherance of exterminating us. Now we're seeing the communist takeover in the United States in the form of open borders, encouragement of race mixing, which of course, due to our recessive genes, results in extermination of us. And most recently, this new war on behalf of the Jew, this attack on Iraq. All of this boils down to the fact that we have to get Bush out of office and get a human being in, someone whose mind has not been destroyed by cocaine and who is not so controllable as he is by the Jews. Clinton may not have been the world's most moral man sexually, but at least he stood up to the Jews, and that's of course why they had to destroy him. JFK did the same, and you know what he got? He got assassinated. Now, a new presidential election is coming up in the future, and we have to make an issue out of this Jewish thing. We have to educate our brethren. White people still form a majority in this country of 70%. Let's take the gloves off, let's be honest about the gas chambers, and let's get the Jews out from controlling our country. And what is a bigot? Someone who doesn't like someone unreasonably, isn't that right? I mean, a bigot would not be someone who dislikes someone for reason, because a lot of people are despicable. In order to be a bigot, you'd have to like someone with no reason. But we have reason to dislike the Jews. It's not because they're ugly. The Negro is uglier. It's not because they're barbaric. The Arab is more barbaric. It's because of what they do. For one thing, they perpetrated the Russian Revolution and killed 65 million white Christians. That's a lot of people to be killing, just to prove to them that communism is good. And then they immediately passed laws that you went to jail if you said anything anti-Semitic. Well, of course the Russians were saying anti-Semitic things. The Semitic Jews had come into Russia, killed their czar, and killed 65 million of their people. But the Israelis, at that time known as Zionists or Jewish Bolsheviks, passed a law that said you couldn't say anything mean about the Jews. What a wonderful way to squash dissidents. Go into a country, kill 65 million of their people, and then make it illegal for them to complain. Then Hitler stood up to them and said, you're not coming into Germany with that stuff. And they announced international Jewry declared war on Hitler for not letting him implement communism in his country. He wanted nationalism, Christianity. So they declared war on Hitler and he put them in concentration camps. The rest is basically history, but what most people don't know is that they've passed laws in 7 countries that you're not allowed to question the Holocaust, in spite of the fact that we have proof now that there were never any gas chambers. If you say that, if you speak the truth in 7 white Christian countries, you go to jail for 7 years. That's the way the Jews operate. They come in, they do something terrible to you, and then they put you in jail if you dare to speak of it. Now we see what they're doing to the Palestinians. Americans aren't told the truth because the Jew pretty much controls our media. That's one of their techniques. Control the media, brainwash the people, and put them in jail if they question. The truth is coming out, though, because of the internet. And people are now seeing that the Jews expelled 700,000 Palestinians from their own side of the partition plan in direct violation of the agreement. And then they stole 50% of the Palestine's part of the partition plan and are now building what are called settlements on the last remaining part of the partition plan, which are not settlements at all. They're high-rise buildings into which they place Jews from all over the world. So first they expelled 700,000 Palestinians, Then they stole Jerusalem and 50% of Palestine. Now they're bulldozing homes and shops that belong to the Palestinians and putting up high-rises. That's why people don't like Jews. You have to speak in generalities if you're going to talk in political terms, because people heard. We have these people, a bunch of them all together, and over here we have these other people, a bunch of them all together, and they have different characteristics. Jews are different from Palestinians. So we talk about the Jews versus the Palestinians. There's nothing wrong with that. The French are like this. The Germans are like that. To say that there's no difference in cultures is silly, just completely silly. Of course cultures differ. People differ not only culturally, but genetically as well. Black people have black skin. And there are other differences as well. The idea that we're not allowed to speak of each other's differences or group differences is just some kind of mind control game to keep people from noticing the truth about different people. Some peoples are more dangerous than others. The Jews are certainly extremely dangerous. They've lied to the world. They've managed to perpetrate this ridiculous hoax on the world in order to get Israel created, and now they're massacring the Palestinians. They have to be stopped. If someone comes into your house, breaks down the door, and starts stealing and threatening your wife and children, you are not committing murder by picking up a gun and shooting that person. And if they bring their wives and children into your house and say, "We're all going to come in and take over your house and you have to leave, or you can stay here but you stay in the hall closet because me and my family are going to take your house," you would shoot their wives and children as well. If you're in your own home and someone burglarizes your home, you are entitled to kill them. That's the law. It's not considered murder, it's self-defense. That's what the Palestinians are doing. But because the Jews control the media, they've brainwashed people into believing that the Palestinians are terrorists for picking the gun up from over the mantle and shooting them when they break into their own land and tell the Palestinians that the land now belongs to the Jews because the Jews have taken it over with force and might. And the word settlement, all of the words are euphemistics to keep from you the truth. It's not a settlement. A settlement sounds like a bunch of little tents that you put on an area. These are not settlements that the Jews are building. They're high-rise buildings. They're going into the Palestinian part of the partition plan, bulldozing down people's homes and shops, leveling an area so that they can put up a high-rise building. And then they bring in Jews from all over the world, America, Europe, Russia, everywhere, and they say, "You can live in this high-rise building now." And they call it a settlement. And it goes over the world media that the Jews have settlements in Palestine and that these mean Palestinians are shooting them up because they have these little settlements there. But they're not settlements. They're not little camps of tents that they're just vacationing in. They're high-rise buildings. And in order to get those high-rise buildings up, first they have to bulldoze the little towns. And that's what they're doing. And I can't imagine anybody thinking that to say the truth about such a matter is born of hate. We know from the teachings of Jesus that truth comes from love. So naturally, the Jews are going to say, these statements are born of hate of the Jews. We are scapegoats. We have done nothing except be saint-like humanitarians, targeted for suffering by the cruel people of the world. And anyone who speaks against us is speaking out of hate, because we, God knows, are good. That's a big, big lie. The Jews are not good. They are bad. And in the Bible, it teaches us to hate the hateful. You have to have a sense of proportion, a sense of balance, a sense of dignity and justice. If someone comes into another person's country, shoots them up, bulldozes their homes, builds up high-rises, not to hate them is hateful. Because it wouldn't be just to support this kind of atrocities. There's only one legitimate path to peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians, and that's for the Israelis to go home. The burglar doesn't make peace with the man he's burglarizing. He leaves the man's home. If he doesn't leave the man's home, the police are supposed to come and get him and take him out. 31 times the United Nations has asked the United States to be the last signatory on resolutions that would allow the United Nations to go in and make the Israelis go home. And 31 times the United States has vetoed those 31 resolutions. We are guilty. The Americans are guilty. We've given the Israelis money for their weapons, and we have shielded them against world censure for the atrocities they're committing against the Palestinians. The answer is not to declare war in the Middle East, but to go to the United Nations, cap in hand, and withdraw those 31 vetoes so that the United Nations can go in to the area and force the Israelis to get out of the Palestinian homeland and go home to Israel. That's the only way you're going to achieve peace. When you have a burglar in the home, the burglar has to be removed. There is no grounds for negotiating between a burglar and the man who owns the home. Whoever is in charge of America is not concerned with America's national security, that's for sure. Otherwise, our borders would be protected, which they aren't. And our treasury wouldn't be being spent turning over Iraq to Israel, which is what we're doing. We know that our government is treasonous. We just don't know what to do about it. But I think it's important for people to understand what's meant by the right to return, because there are three distinctly separate stages by which Israel has taken over Palestine, on her way to taking over the Middle East, on her way to taking over the world. And these three steps get confused when we talk about the daily news. So you need to understand that the first stage of taking over Palestine illegally was when Israel first was conceived and set up shop on the Israeli side of the partition plan. Israel, the state of Israel, was predicated on the agreement by David Ben-Gurion, who was the first prime minister of Israel, that the resident Palestinians would continue to reside on the Israeli side of the partition plan. The partition plan being the map that was drawn by the United Nations in order to create Israel, which divided the area approximately 50-50 between Israel and Palestine. Israel was created, as I said, premised on the understanding that Israel was not to drive off the 700,000 resident Palestinians, but Israel did. Almost from the first day, Israel started their campaign of horror and terror and bloodshed and torture and rape to drive out 700,000 resident Palestinians off of the Israeli side of the partition plan to the Palestinian or Arab side of the partition plan. So these are what we call the displaced people, or the expelled people, or the people with right of return. That was step one. Step two was when Israel took 50% of the Palestine part, and step three is what they're doing now, which is taking the last part. When people say that one of the stages in the plan for peace is the right of return, they're not talking about getting the Jews out of the Palestinian area and making them take down their high-rises and take them over to Israel. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the very first stage, which is when Israel expelled 700,000 Arabs, and the Arabs are saying, we have the right to return. That's stage one, and now the reason the number is up to 4 million is that in the last 50 years, 700,000 have turned into 4 million, because that's the way the human population expands with a doubling rate of 30 years, which is what we have now. You start with 1 million, and in 30 years you get 2 million. So basically, 700,000 have turned into 4 million. That seems like a little bit of a stretch, exaggeration, but that's the numbers they're claiming. 700,000 were driven off, and 4 million have the right to come back. And that is true, but it's only stage one of the atrocities against the Palestinians. Stage two was taking Jerusalem and 50% of the Palestinian land, and stage three is what we're in now, where they're bulldozing down homes and shops and setting up, building high rises. There's no basic difference between the philosophies of the Muslims, the Christians, and the Jews, at least based on their writings, since all three religions use the same five books as the basis of their religion: Genesis, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and Exodus. We all use those books, and if you'll read those books with any degree of intelligence, you will see revealed a God of love. If you read those books with a spirit of hate, you will see a God of hate, because the books reveal a lot of evil that's done in the name of God, but somehow God always shines through if you want to see it. And what Jesus did was show people how to see the God light in those five books. But people before Jesus have seen it. It's just that Jesus was the best at showing it to other people. So there's no basic difference in philosophy between these three great religions: Christian, the Torah, and the Quran. They all use these same five books. And I don't think that the cultural differences or the differences in language account for the problems between the Jews and the Palestinians. In my opinion, there are no Jews. The Jews were expelled from Israel in 70 AD by the Romans, and they intermarried with various peoples and basically died out. What happened was that some people called Jews, and maybe these were the historical Jews, got in control of the worldwide slave trade. And in 700 AD, some strange people that lived in the Khazars, who were Turkish Asiatics, converted to Judaism in order to participate in the worldwide Jew-controlled slave trade. So now we had a whole bunch of Jews who were never Jews, but they called themselves Jews, and these were Khazars. It was these Khazar Jews that perpetrated the Russian Revolution, being located as they were just to the southeast of Russia. For 1,000 years, these Khazarians, these Khazar Jews, these Turkish Asiatics who called themselves Jews but were not Jews, were fighting with Russia over Russia. And interestingly enough to me, when the automobile was discovered, suddenly the Middle East became important to people with foresight and money, and it was deemed important to gain control of the Middle East. And so this thing called communism got developed, and there was a lot of plotting and planning going into how the communists were going to take over the world and get a hold of that money so they could have this two-tiered state, a slave state, and a few elite party members. They used the Khazar Jews as a gimmick, and they decided that they would have to have an Israel, which the Jews had always thought would be nice to get back to Israel, plant the Khazar Jews there, which they have now done, and then expand to everything from the Nile to the Euphrates, and then they could take over the world once they got control of oil. So when you're looking at Israel, this is what you're looking at. And it's not a cultural difference at all. It's the difference between a bunch of evil, nasty people who want to control the world and wipe out the Palestinians as step one toward taking over the rest of the Middle East, and the victims of this whole plot, which is the Palestinians, who have lived there for thousands of years. It's not a cultural difference at all. It's aggression, an act of warlike aggression based on the Holocaust myth in order to start Israel, and now They want to expand Israel, and then they want to take over the world, and it has to be stopped. There are set boundaries in the Middle East, definite set boundaries. They are called the partition plan, and that's why I eternally refer to the partition plan. You can find it by searching for Partition Plan Israel, and you'll get about 200 sites with maps that show exactly the same thing. The Partition Plan. The Partition Plan was drawn by the United Nations when Israel was created, and it divided the area approximately 50-50 between Israel and Palestine, and it's there for anybody who wants to see it. The problem is that the Israelis have never honored the partition plan. And as I tried to say, there were three breaches by the Israelis to destroy the partition plan and give everything on the partition plan to Israel and steal Palestine's 50%. Number one, Israel drove off 700,000 Palestinians off the Israeli side of the partition plan, in direct violation of their agreement with the United Nations, for which reason the United States were talking about rescinding Israel altogether, because they did not honor their agreement. The reason I'm repeating this is because no matter how many times I say it, people try to dodge the fact that there is such a thing as the partition plan. It does have borders. And the answer to the problem in the Middle East is for the Israelis to go back to their side of the partition plan. Until they do this, they are burglars, and they should be treated like burglars. Through the use of force, they should be removed from the Palestinian side of the partition plan, which the United Nations has attempted 31 times to do, and 31 times every signatory in the Security Council has signed these resolutions, and the United States has vetoed these resolutions. So we, the United States of America, are participating in the burglarization of Palestine, and we are supplying the money to the Israelis to build 400 nuclear weapons and all of the weapons that they use against the Palestinians, who have nothing but sticks and stones with which to defend their homes. How can we then call the Palestinians terrorists when all they're doing is trying to drive burglars out of their homes? Burglars who are armed 100 times better than they are, and who are backed by the United States. How can we, as United States citizens, feel anything but shame for this and raise our voices against our treasonous government? Because it's our duty with the right of free speech. It's not just a privilege, it's a duty. If you are a free man in a free country and your government is committing crimes in your name, you must lift your voice and decry this misuse of your government's power. The argument is, the Jews only want to go back to the land that was theirs. The truth that's being withheld from you is that the partition plan made it very clear that it wasn't to be theirs. The partition plan gave Israel their half of the partition plan and the Arabs the other part of the partition plan. Now, this man who espouses the Jewish position, the Israeli position, the Zionist position, which is created by people who claim they are Jews and are not Jews at all, that was our property in the first place. We don't have to pay any attention to the partition plan. We just want what was ours. Well, when was it theirs? It hasn't been theirs since 70 AD, when they were kicked out of the area by the Romans. In 1900, the area of Palestine had 1% Jews. So how can they claim that it was theirs? Are they going back to 70 AD? You betcha. They're not telling you that. They're not telling you that their whole claim is predicated on a scripture that doesn't even relate to Jews at all. It relates to all 13 of the tribes, including the Arabs. And apparently, one of those tribes was, there were 12 tribes, excuse me. One of those tribes was black. One of those tribes was white. The tribes of Israel were made up by every race. And they broke down into racial segments, each race being a tribe. So when God, if, you know, supposedly God said, I'm giving you this land, he was giving it to the entire human race, not just the Jews. This is all wicky-wacky, all poo-poo talk. There was 1% Jew in that area in 1900. Now, what happened in 1900? The automobile was invented and oil became important. All of a sudden, all of the big shots were sitting around giant tables with catered lunches, figuring out how they could get control of the Middle East. And a bunch of things happened. England took over the Ottoman Empire. The Balfour Declaration was designed, which created Israel. The Russian Revolution took place. All of that happened within 10 or 20 years' time. All of it being in furtherance of a plan to create a one-world government in which this certain group of people, who I don't even know who they are exactly, but they are not Jews, but they claim to be Jews, because that's the little myth that they're perpetrating on the human race. God gave it to us. We are Jews. We are the chosen people. You have to get off the property or God will send you to hell. And then they commence to do their silly nonsense. There is no legal claim whatsoever that the Jews have on any part of Arabia since they got kicked out by Rome in 70 AD. Except for the partition plan, which they themselves say is null and void. Therefore, they have no claim to be in Arabia, and we should go ahead with the plan of America in 1950, when it became obviously that these Jews were not going to be honorable, that we should completely rescind Israel. Since, of course, we can't do that, the very least we can do is stop sending them money. For a second, I want to comment on the right to return concept that's being confused. The phrase right to return does not relate to the Jews coming back to Israel after the diaspora. The term right to return relates to the Palestinians who were driven off of the Israeli side of the partition plan when the Israelis landed. What happened was the Israelis had made a promise, which was the reason we gave them Israel, that they would allow the resident Palestinians to continue living even on the Israeli side of the partition plan. But right away when the Israelis moved in, they used force and torture to drive out the resident Palestinians, promising them a right to return, which of course they never intended to carry out. It was partly in reaction to that the five neighboring Arab states declared war on Israel because Israel was expelling the Palestinians. There is a lot of Jewish lies to support the theory that the Arab states were not retaliating for the expulsion of the Palestinians, but who are you going to believe? Are you going to believe the Israelis who say they just up and left because they wanted to? Or are you going to believe what's obvious, which is that they were expelled out, and even the Zionists admit that they were expelling these horrible Arabs, and then the Arabian states from around the region retaliated. At any rate, these displaced, expelled Palestinians have the right to return and are now claiming it. And it's important not to confuse the right to return phraseology with any claim the Jews might have that they have the right to return after being driven out by the Romans 2,000 years ago. Right to return is specific, meaning the Palestinians have a right to return to the Israeli side of the partition plan. There were no Jews in that region except for 1% in 1900. I don't know how the Jews got there between 1900 and 1920, but I do believe by 1920, the Israeli portion of the land, the Palestine land, had 25% Jews. So when you go from 1% to 25%, you're looking at something that has some plan behind it. There was some plan in place in approximately 1900 that the Jews came up with, the Jews who are not Jews but call themselves Jews, to take over the Middle East. And to that end, they started immigrating into this area so that their numbers increased from 1% to 25% of the total numbers of people in Palestine between 1900 and 1925. It's very important that the automobile was invented in 1884, making oil the most important commodity in the world for the rest of civilization. In 1884, Zionism was invented. I maintain that the advent of the automobile tipped off world leaders to the importance of oil, and plans were made to take over the Middle East. And they decided to use the concept of Zionism because they could fit it into the Christian belief system that somebody could be the chosen people to whom Christians should accede and allow a takeover. The Jews are lying to you when they claim any native right to that territory, since by 1900 only 1% of them were Jews. All the rest is lies and rhetoric which have been formulated since 1900 to get you to give them the rights to the Middle East, including the chosen people myth that convinced Christians from all over the world to just fall on their face and give this property to the Jews, not knowing the importance of it, of course, that it was oil they were after. Another one of their myths was the Holocaust myth. They have no problem making up myths to get their way. They don't call them lies. They call them myths. And, of course, the Holocaust was one of those myths that we're just now, it's starting to break into the news, that it is a complete lie. Today, Pravda wrote an article stating what we've been trying to say for decades, that there were no gas chambers, that the Jews have benefited by the Holocaust myth by getting Israel to be created. Israel was created through the use of the Holocaust myth, and Israel is being expanded through the myth that they've always lived there, when in fact they haven't lived there from 70 AD to 1900. So they claim they've always lived there. All you have to do is look at your Bible, and therefore they're entitled to it. And who are these Palestinians? They never existed. The truth is, the true Semite looks like Yasser Arafat, a short little monkey of a guy with a funny-looking face. That is your true Semite. Israel Sharon and the rest of the Jews that you see look much more like Khazar Jews, which are these Turkish Asiatics who converted to Judaism in 700 AD in order to get a part of the worldwide Jew-controlled slave trade, and who perpetrated the Russian Revolution, killing 65 million white people. And in the same year, Turks killed 1.5 million white Christian Armenians, who are not really white, but they are very close to being white, and they are Christian. So I feel that all these things happened between 1900 and 1920. The Armenian genocide by the Turks, the Russian genocide of 65 million by these Turkish Asiatics converted to Judaism, the Balfour Declaration, where international forces were getting ready to take over the Middle East by creating Israel, the German Holocaust, which never happened except for Hitler declaring war against the communists in Russia and putting these Jewish Bolsheviks in concentration camps, which is the right thing to do when you have dissidents of the state, which they were. There were no gas chambers. There was no plan for exterminating the Jews on the part of Hitler, and 6 million did not die. The only extermination plan that's being put into place is an attack on the white race, because the white race, being the most developed, the most inventive, the most intelligent, and the most valiant in battle, is the one race that stands between this plot to take over the world by taking over the oil on the part of these Jews who claim to be Jews but are not Jews, and complete totalitarian slave state, because the white race is not as controllable. It is the white race that is being exterminated, never the Jews. The Jews have never been scapegoated. They are just difficult people that have been expelled from 90 countries because nobody likes their attitude.
We must.
England needs to do what Hawaii is doing about their population problem. Hawaii has a one-man-in, one-man-out policy. That means no one can come into Hawaii and live there until somebody leaves Hawaii, either by death or emigration. That's what England has to do. England has been taken over by Zionists who have convinced English people that they don't have the right to their culture, their tradition, their queen, any of the things that make Englishmen into Englishmen. They've been demoralized into believing that they should be ashamed of. And that's terrible. As one of England's children, America has an obligation to go to England and reestablish a filial loyalty to England and share with England what we've learned about race mixing and open borders, lowering expectations in school, lowering the standards of morality, and really explain to England that she can't just trust in God to protect her values and her traditions and her customs. English children need to be taught, as they used to be, about what it means to be English, what the standards are for an English person, how to speak English, and how to be proud of their English heritage, and above all, to marry only English people or white people from other countries, but never to race mix. Don't forget the lessons that we've been taught by Revelator the Oracle. The original sin was race mixing, when Eve had sex with the Nasech monster, which translates in the ancient Aramaic into necromancer, witch doctor, and serpent. That's what Nasech means, which is the word that's used in the ancient Aramaic texts when the Bible talks about Eve talking to the serpent. No, Eve wasn't talking to a serpent. Eve was talking to a Nasech, which is a necromancer. That means a lover of the dead. Or also the word means witch doctor, a practicer of voodoo. So we know that the Nasech / serpent was a black man, and that Eve was a white woman. So the Bible opens up with a bang when it teaches you that the worst thing you can do is mix your blood with another race, especially if you're from a superior race and you're mixing blood with a person of an inferior race. That's simply a moral tenet of the Christian religion, as well as the Muslim religion, as well as the Jewish religion, because all three of these religions are based on the book of Genesis, which is where this teaching is to be found in the story of Adam and Eve. But science backs it up. Science teaches us that the genes of the superior races are recessive in relationship to the genes of the inferior races. So when a person from a superior race, like the white race, mates with a member of the inferior race, like the black race, the tendency genetically is to produce black or inferior children with all of the racial traits of the black man, the twice thick cranium, the 20% smaller frontal lobe, etc., etc., and the 20% lower IQ level. The idea that there is one human race came from that plagiarist Albert Einstein, who, remember, stole 4 patents when he was a junior clerk in the Bern patent office, and is no genius at all. He was just the spokesman for the communists who wanted to destroy all of the 3 great races that God made so that they could take over the world in a totalitarian slave state. One of their main platforms, one of the tenets that they brainwashed people with, was that there is only one race, the human race. But of course, that's entirely false. The fastest way to chaos is to destroy people's racial loyalty and integrity. Racism should make anybody feel good, from any race. It's an opportunity to study yourself, your family, your history, and take pride in what your ancestors have done for you. It also gives you an opportunity to look at qualities that you don't like in yourself, which also have a genetic component, and recognize that you don't have to carry the onus of these bad qualities around in with you. These are just visited on you because of bad genetics, and it's your job to exercise the good side of your soul to control the bad parts. That's how man evolves. He looks forward to becoming a better man, and he gives up the old bad ways. Anybody's going to feel better about themselves if they study their racial genetics and take pride in what's good and work toward getting rid of what's bad. But you don't want to give up your racial identity. That leaves you with no soul. That leaves you in a situation where if we're all equal and we're all the same, then we all must treat each other the same. And there can be no choice in our personal relationships or any passion or excitement. That's not the way to live. You want to make choices. You have to make choices in order to progress. And then you take pride in your choices and in the results of your work as you work to become that better person. And as you learn that some people are better for you to associate with than others, and make a conscious effort to make your associations creative and constructive and exciting. That's what makes your life fun, is choosing people that you like to be with and fighting for the right to defend your right to have your personal friends. It's all about choice and about genetics and recognition of the truth about yourself and your background and your parents, and an honest appraisal of your genetics, your heritage, your culture should result in loving yourself and your parents and your ancestors more, and getting sort of a sense of humor about the problems that your family may have passed on genetically and the quirks and foibles that you don't want to suffer. For example, if you're Irish, you can take pride in your beauty and your flashing eyes and your beautiful hair, your luminous skin, but you need to know that you have a predisposition for alcoholism. So, you remember your old ancestor that was always in the corner making loud jokes and drinking all the time, and you realize that it's not your fault if you want to drink more than your friends that are not Irish. It's genetic, and you just take it upon yourself to fight that tendency. That's what racial pride is all about. It's accepting the good with the bad, but by all means, don't give up your identity. You need that in order to love yourself. It's this self-love, self-esteem that the communists are trying to take from you by telling you there's no such thing as race, no such thing as culture, no such thing as you. That's one of the funny things about the black race. The huge variation in the genotypes of the black race is one of the things that makes white people very suspicious of the race, the black race in general. Not only is the black race far less intelligent than the white race, and far more prone to sex and impulse activity because of the 8 times higher testosterone rate, but there's this huge divergence in genotypes in the black race that make us wonder what the heck happened with that race. It's not a controlled race. It's not a race with a distinct racial type like the white race, which is, since 1.8 million years, the white race has always looked alike. They look alike each other. They are tall, slender, have blonde hair, blue eyes, and they're very intelligent. That's what white people have been like from the beginning of time, which is 1.8 million years ago, until race mixing started fairly recently. They all look the same. Like the police will tell you, good people are all the same, and criminals are all different. That's what you look for when you look for a champion in animals and humans, the one that is the model. The black race doesn't seem to have any model. They've got little short ones. They've got little short fat ones. Over in another place, they've got little short skinny ones. They've got enormously tall skinny ones. They've got great big fat ones. And they've got all manner of different types, from the great big buttocks that goes, you know, almost up to the waist and then down, to the huge Ubangi lips that they get by putting the hubcap size plates in their lips, and then they elongate their head, their necks, by putting rings on the neck so that the neck becomes very long. And then sometimes with the kids, they, when they're first born, they clamp these boards on their heads so they can make their head look very long and tall in the back. All of these attempts to change their genetic appearance is based on the fact that, in fact, the race itself is very, very diverse in what appears to white people to be kind of a chaotic method of evolving. Why are there so many weird types of black people and only one type of white person? The classical, tall, thin, blue-eyed blonde. Well, of course, there's been a lot of race mixing, so those genotypes are getting rarer and rarer, but they still exist, and they still all look like each other. So it is true that the black man can be very, very different from another black man, but that's not a good thing. That's not proof of a good thing. It's proof of a bad thing. This chaos in which the black race developed in Africa. Now, another thing about the African genesis of the human race to take a look at is that the Cro-Magnon developed before, not after, the Homo erectus. They both branched off from Australopithecus. The Cro-Magnon was a much more modern type than Homo erectus, who is a kind of a long-armed creature with a very small brain resembling the dog. More resembling a dog than what we're used to thinking of as a human head with the, you know, the large cranium in the back. It was first Cro-Magnon came, and he branched off, and from Cro-Magnon came the white Homo sapien who left Africa 2 million years ago. But long after the white man had found his way to East Anglia in England, Homo erectus was still evolving into Neanderthal and then into the non-white races of the Homo sapien type. So there was a huge divergence between these two racial strains, the whites and the non-whites. And it's just very important to understand that, yes, we all came from Africa, but boy, are we different now. I have in my hands the congressional record dated May 11, 1939, in which the Honorable William H. King decries Nazism. Now, of course, King is a Jewish name, is it not? And I'm surprised, I shouldn't be, I should be used to this, but he's saying that Hitler and Nazism threatens world peace and the brotherhood of man, and he talks about the shame of Italy and Germany and Japan all turning into Nazi states, which, as I understand it, are states or countries who believe in a cohesive racial gene pool and one religion for the entire state. And he talks about the world longing for peace and the great mass of people everywhere regarding Nazism and fascism as disturbers of the peace and the enemies of moral, economic, and religious regeneration of the world. Now, here's this Jew talking to Congress about how bad Hitler's Germany was, and not a breath is spoken about the fact that in Russia at this time, 65 million white Christians are being butchered, and I do mean butchered, including raped, executed, crucified, and just really butchered by the Jewish Bolsheviks in Russia. This Jew is focusing all of his negative attention on Hitler as if nothing was happening in Russia, where 65 white Christians were being exterminated. Okay, now this guy quotes Hitler as saying, "What the Germans want is not a peace brought about by olive branches in the hands of sniveling pacifists and sobbing old women, but a peace guaranteed by the victory-rich sword of a people of lords and masters, which sword brings the world into the service of our highest culture." Anybody have a problem with that? And here's another quote. "The time will come," and this is the one I really think is important to us today, "the time will come when problems will arise, which only a highest race of lords having at their command the means and resources of the whole planet can solve. And what do you think he was talking about? I think he was talking about the coming overpopulation problem, where the doubling rate has changed from, in 1,000 years, from the time of Christ, it took the human population to double from 1 million to 2 billion, from 1 billion to 2 billion. In other words, we had 1 billion in 0 AD, and we had 2 billion in 1,000 AD. And that, because we accelerate with a geometric progression with an exponent of 2, it goes 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, etc. It starts out very, very slow, and it goes very fast. We're now at the top of that J curve, that chart, which looks like a J when you plot it out. And we need brilliant people with a lot of resources to disseminate birth control information throughout the world in order to face this challenge. Hitler was entirely right. Stupid people are not going to be able to face the challenges that we're facing today. So he was simply trying to put into place a good, cohesive, racial gene pool of white people who have that superior intelligence, get them in a position of dominance worldwide, not necessarily military. The point wasn't to subdue the inferior races, but to get in a position where we could solve the problems and implement those solutions. Now, what's happening, because we didn't do this, is we've got inferior people, namely Jews, trying to solve these problems using all kinds of unethical means, like famines and bioweapons, like AIDS and other things are probably going to be coming in the future to wipe out races. That's not the way to solve the population problem. War does absolutely nothing. Knocking off a few million beautiful white men beautiful young men, white or black or brown, does not do anything for the population problem. The only way you're going to solve it is through birth control. The only way you're going to get the human race to lower its birth rate is to have a brilliant solution in place. We don't have that brilliant solution. We've got nothing but chaos. So all Hitler was saying is, we've got problems, folks, and we need to have the most intelligent people empowered to solve those problems. That's a brilliant solution to put birth control in the food. Yes, it's absolutely brilliant. You see, nobody should suffer and nobody should die. Nobody should starve during the process that we're going through now of controlling the birth rate. It's unthinkably barbaric to think that it's all right for millions of people to starve to death, or that it's all right to exterminate a whole race of people to control the population. Fortunately, not only is it unethical and break the heart of any intelligent person, but it also doesn't work. That's the beautiful part. It simply will not work. You can kill off a few million people with starvation, which is grotesque, and anybody who considers that as a solution is obviously not fully human. Or you can get it at its source and give people birth control, preventing the birth of not just that one child that would have been conceived through irresponsibility, but the hundreds of the people it would produce, the children and children's children, etc. So absolutely, we need to disseminate birth control to the lower races, because they can't do it for themselves, and we need to feed them, because you just can't let people starve. But to feed people without giving them birth control just makes the problem worse. So you have to do both. You have to feed people and give them birth control. It's no accident that the white race is on top. The white race has always been on top. What people don't understand is that it was the white race that were the ancient Egyptians that built the pyramids, not the sub-Saharan Negroes, not even the Mediterraneans. What happened is that 1.8 million years ago, Homo sapien had already developed out of Cro-Magnon, and those Homo sapiens who could left Africa for parts unknown, the ones who were the most creative, the most intelligent, the strongest, left Africa 1.8 million years ago, and we find remnants of them in East Anglia, England, in Australia, and in China. This is the oldest race that we know of, as far as being a human race is concerned. And we have had by far the longest time to evolve. As we have evolved, or even back then, the remnants show that the white people were tall, slender, with blue eyes and light hair. So this is a real, honest-to-God race. This tall, slender, blue-eyed blonde that everyone has been taught to hate really does exist, and still exists. And there have been migrations. They've migrated all over the world. They've left their mark, which is the building of pyramids. For some reason I can't relate to, even though I'm pretty much 100% white, white people just love to build pyramids, and they build them wherever they go. We've got pyramids built in North America, 30,000 years old, that were built by white people. And the American Indian won't let us do a DNA check to prove that the white people were here before the Indians were here. They find the remnants, and then they hide them, and they won't let us do DNA tests because they don't want it known that white people built those pyramids and white people were here first. We have the same type of pyramid building going on in South America. We have the incredible Egyptian pyramids that were made possible to be built because then not only was the white man feeling like building pyramids, which apparently he's been doing all his life, but he had a massive workforce. All of Africa and Arabia would go through various famines. And when they would go through famines, they would migrate on up to Egypt and ask for jobs. And the Egyptians would give them jobs working on the pyramids in exchange for a little bit of food. Then when the drought passed, all these Negroes and all of these semi-Negroes, these Semitics, would go on back home. And this happened over and over again. So the white man in Egypt was in a very odd position of having this massive workforce to figure out what to do with in exchange for food. And that's just the beginning of the white race history. It's an incredible history. We're the ones that built up Rome. We're the ones that built up Greece. And then we just keep, you know, going here, going there. We do whatever we want to do because we're the best. So what? You know, why should that bother you? If anybody had any sense, they would try to be friends with a white man, not try to kick him out, kick him down, because he's not going to kick. I think we should end all discrimination lawsuits, and I'll tell you why. The discrimination lawsuits came into effect, I think, around 75 years ago. And at that time, it was decided that the black people who had been slaves were being routinely excluded from all of the social activities of life in the United States, even to the extent that they weren't allowed to drive on buses and trains or drink from water fountains. The first fight against this discrimination was based on the Interstate Commerce Clause in the Constitution, in which it basically suggests that everyone has the right to travel, or at least that interstate commerce shouldn't be impaired. And based on that statement, people of good mind decided that the right to travel, therefore, could not be impaired, and they found that the right to travel was impaired for blacks. So special rules were passed on the basis of the Interstate Commerce Clause to protect the rights of blacks to travel. But then people noticed that blacks had other problems that they needed help with from the government. They also couldn't get rooms in hotels, they couldn't eat at restaurants, and things like that. And it was found that they were basically crippled because of our social structure. And at that time, the first anti-discrimination law was passed, and there were some guidelines. They said that the black people had to be protected because they were a discrete and insular minority. Discrete in that they were black instead of white and could be easily seen, and thereby became victims of persecution. Discrete and insular. Insular meaning that they were all sort of locked up in little ghettos and they were not allowed to get out and roam around and be part of the society. So because the blacks were deemed to be a discrete and insular minority, The anti-discrimination laws were passed to protect blacks. Later, the handicapped people said, "We are also a discrete and insular minority, and we should also be protected." And at that time, the Supreme Court said, "Wait a minute. If we extend this special protection for blacks, which is obviously needed because of their history of slavery, if we extend this special protection to handicapped people, we're going to start down a slippery slope, and pretty soon everyone's going to be protected, or too many people will be protected, and then the tables will turn, and the majority will actually be at risk from the minority, which is what has happened now. At present, we have almost everyone protected except the white male majority, and that's not what's right for society. It's my belief that at this point, even the black people are no longer a discrete and insular minority. Their minority status at 13% is no different from other minority groups, and the whites are fast coming into a balanced proportion. Here in Glendale, white people are already in the minority. So the minority status of the blacks is going away. As far as the discrete element of the discrimination clause, they're definitely not discrete. They're not kept in ghettos. They're not isolated, which is what insulated means. They roam around with the rest of us, and we know them and pretty much accept them. I think the same is true for the handicapped, the gays, women, and everybody else. Certainly fat people don't need any particular protection, but when you look at the history of the anti-discrimination laws, you might really consider that the white man needs protection. What the girl did was successfully demonstrate that there is a war going on, because bulldozing someone's house is an act of war. If it were a mere civil dispute, somebody would have been arrested and taken into court or something like that. But the Israelis are just, they're not taking these suspected terrorists into court. They're bulldozing down their houses. That proves that the Israelis are at war with the Palestinians. And that was one of the things that this woman's martyrdom demonstrated to the world. That's probably was her intent. Because our media, the country she comes from, does not reveal to the public that there's a war going on, which we are supporting. We're paying for this war. We're on the side of the Israelis, and Americans have a right to know that we're at war and that we're committing atrocities against Palestinians, because the American people might like to put pressure on the politicians to stop this war. So she wanted to make it clear to the world, and especially to members of her own country, that these atrocities are being committed on behalf of Americans, and she was successful in that. Nevertheless, her real intent was to make an issue of it, and I believe there were cameras there at the time, to say, stop, you cannot lawfully bulldoze down these houses. If these people have committed a crime against you, you must take them to court, otherwise you are at war. That was her intent, and she had the right to do that. She had the right to get in front of the bulldozer, because the bulldozer had no legal right to be on that property. Therefore, she was not acting against the law. She may have been negligent, but she was not the one who was illegally on that property. It was the bulldozer who was illegally on that property. Now, taking it out of the context of criminality and looking at it from a civil point of view, you are not entitled to kill someone if you can avoid it. If you accidentally kill them, that's negligence. But if you intentionally kill them, that's murder. And it is clear to people who have viewed the photographs that this bulldozer could have stopped and chose not to do so, which is what makes it murder. The idea of making Americans feel guilty of prejudice because they don't want 1 million illegal aliens per year to break through their borders is just guilt-mongering. Americans should not feel guilty for wanting to protect their national sovereignty, nor for demanding of their leaders that they defend the national borders, which is the constitutional mandate of our leaders. Our leaders are committing treason against America by opening those borders for whatever reason, whether it's because they want votes or whether it's to satisfy the demands of corporate America. It doesn't matter. The Constitution mandates that the national boundaries shall be defended by our military. It's not just that the government won't protect the borders. It's that the government is opening the borders. It's treason. They're even putting little water stations on the borders. And most recently, the Mexicans have sued the United States for closing what little bit they have closed, because they say now they're forcing them to break through in places that are more dangerous than the other places. And that's wrong. The only coup d'etat this country has ever seen was the assassination of JFK, and nobody gives a damn about it, except me. I want it investigated. I want those files opened. I think it's important to find out who is this nefarious rogue government that controls us. And I think we're going to find it was Israel, because it was 3 months before JFK was assassinated that he demanded that Israel turn over her 400 illegally manufactured nuclear weapons, which she made with American money. Now we're in the position where Bush, an ex-cocaine addict, if he's even an ex-cocaine addict, whose brain has been fried and has nothing left of his personality except aggression, has been easily taken over by the Israeli shadow government, against which Bill Clinton stood up so much that they had to destroy him by cooking up that Monica Lewinsky scandal so that he was crippled in office, couldn't function, and yet did more for this country than anybody since JFK. So maybe Bush will get voted out, and that would be good. But it is my position that that's not going to happen unless we take advantage of the information that was revealed to us after 9/11. When we saw our government malfunctioning, we saw Michael Chertoff sending 3 cells of Israeli spies home for safe harbor. We saw Michael Chertoff, the head of Homeland Security, a Jew, arrest and jail all of the white power dissidents, David Duke, Ernst Zundel, Matt Hale, who were pointing to the fact that the Jews had taken over this government. The Jews have to be addressed. America's position in relationship to Israel committing atrocities against the Palestinians, against all of the signatories in the Security Council, has to be addressed. I believe that if the good people of America are going to win our destiny to go toward God instead of toward the devil, we're going to have to start making Jews the major issue in the upcoming election. And I mean seriously. We're going to have to take the gloves off. We're going to have to educate the American people about what has been done to us. We're going to have to reveal the whole hoax, prove that the gas chambers never existed, and let this country go through its emotional reaction and come out the better for it, and never let this happen again. We cannot go on supporting Israel to the detriment of our own national interest. Those borders have to be closed, and we've got to cut off relations with Israel. Any president who doesn't promise that in the next election should not be voted in. That's all for tonight, folks. Thanks again for listening to the Hola Hoax. Tune in again next week, same time, same channel.